Chapter 21 Waterfall.
I shall save you! Show yourselves, you dogs! You curs! Ha! There you are, you mangy mutts!
It actually seemed like the wasteland, for once, was throwing me a carrot. Sure, we'd lost the whole morning going to Miramar, only to have to teleport back to evade another monster pony, but then we discovered an alternate route. One that might actually get us past without having to worry about flying death, or at least not worry so much. And I'd have some pony to get drunk with. Of course, we'd need spark, magic-y stuff to make the boat run.
Charity!
I cried as I stormed into the post office. The yellow filly didn't bother looking up from the stack of boxes next to her.
No time to deal right now, Blackjack. I've got to double-check this stuff to make sure Tarboots didn't swap me those mines for a few boxes of gravel.
She said sourly around a pen as she scribbled on a notepad. I leapt over the counter in a clear violation of every rule of the Crusaders and seized Charity's shoulders with my forehooves.
Charity, I need spark batteries and magic cartridges. Now! Or gemstones! I need them right now. Please?
Her eyes lit up and rolled thoughtfully, and with a flip of her head, she spat out her pen and sent it spinning through the air to land neatly behind her ear.
Well, adding in the processing costs and getting on my nerves tax, I figure I could sell them for... And we're broke,
I added. Paying Ditzy and trading for what we'd needed had sapped most of our caps. I grinned as widely as I could and tried to ignore the feeling of sweat running down the back of my barding. Her smile disappeared.
Get out,
she declared imperiously. She flicked the pen from behind her ear, caught it in her mouth, and resumed checking her list. I fell to my knees.
Please, Charity, please. Without the boat, we'll have to walk. If we walk, then the monster pony will find us. And if she finds us, then I'll feel sorry for her before I kill her. And if I do that, then I'll feel guilty. And if I feel guilty, then I'll whine. Please don't make me whine!
I begged as several Crusaders peeked over the counter to watch in amazement.
Wait, what are you doing?
She sputtered as I fell on my face and hugged her hoof.
Please, Charity! Please? Pretty please? Please, 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 please!
I wailed as I kicked my back hooves.
All right,
she yelled down at me, yanking her hoof free of my embrace as she blushed.
I can spare... one.
My eyes grew large.
Two?
Tears ran down my cheeks as my lip trembled. She let out a grunt of disgust.
Oh, just take the whole box, Blackjack.
She walked over to a shelf, pulled out a wooden crate, and tossed it to me, 6 glowing spark batteries rattling within. I just gave a whimper, the whine growing higher and higher. A bottle of wild Pegasus plopped on top of them. Humming in glee and floating the box in front of me, I made my way back towards the bridge, the humming faltering not a bit when, a few seconds after I got out of the shop, Charity screamed after me,
"It's going on your tab, Blackjack! You hear me? With interest!" The Seahorse used to be an equestrian navy patrol boat.
Oil Can, the rust-colored engineer mare, explained as she trotted to the hatch at the stern of the deck, her horn glowing as she undid the dogs and secured a rag to her curly red mane.
I doubt there's anything original on it besides the engine, though. I figure the last 20 years or so we've had to replace everything at least once.
She hopped nimbly up into the air and disappeared down through the hatch. The rest of the crew was finishing up business with 2 caravanners from Flank who'd come to trade chems and boxed food for bullets and music recordings brought from Tempony in Manhattan. Sore as I was from Caprice, I'd gotten some sugar apple bombs and some more buck, just in case I had to wrestle Rampage again, in exchange for a few rounds of hunting ammo. A dirty look from me proved quite effective at getting them to shave a bit off the bill.
Come on in,
Oil Can said cheerfully.
Plenty of room for everybody.
Glory stared into the hole with an audible gulp. I just gave her a friendly nudge on her hip and a smile that would hopefully convince her not to worry about it. P-21 jumped down happily. Stable ponies had no problem with nice, tight cramp spaces. The engine itself was a block of polished brass inset with rubies and emeralds. It was connected by wires to a sapphire water talisman, twice the size of what we saw in 99's utility room, that was hooked up to several larger pipes.
This here is the engine. It converts the raw magical spark energy into power for the water talisman. That makes the water that jets out the back to move the boat.
Excuse me? Is there supposed to be this much water in here?
P-21 asked, looking down at the inch or so of scummy water that was sloshing around our hooves. My pit buck clicked slowly. There wasn't nearly enough radiation to worry me unless I had an engine bilge water slurpee. The motherly mare grinned at him.
Well, if you'd like to grab a bucket and do something about it, I know we'd be much obliged.
She reached into my box and pulled out a spark battery, flipping the heavy square container in her hooves. Inside the crystal hovered a red ball of magical energy that shed little waving lines of light. She opened a panel with her mouth and pulled out an empty container, then slid the fresh one into the receptacle. There was a sudden hum as the gems lit up.
Of course, for when we don't have spark batteries, we've got a flex converter.
She gestured at a circle strung with a spiderweb of glistening crystal strands.
Not nearly as efficient. And if that doesn't work?
I asked.
Well, in that case, you can get out and push. We've had to do that a few times.
P-21 looked at the grease-slathered boards of the exposed inner surface of the hull.
I'm just curious why it's made of wood.
You know what happens when you take a nice metal boat out to the ocean? Pretty soon, it's a rusty boat at the bottom of the ocean. Sure, lumber might be a bitch to find, but it's a damn sight easier to get and work than steel plate. We seal her up with tar and pitch as well as we can, paint her if we can get it, plate the hull if we can manage it, and she's the best damned boat in Equestria.
With an interesting captain to boot, P-21 observed dryly.
Oil Can chuckled.
Yeah, Thrush ain't what most folks expect. But her daddy was 2 buckets shy of a dry hold. Once, we were stuck on a beach off Main Zabar with this tainted sea serpent watching us past the reef. So the captain, he somehow gets a whole flock of rock crabs to carry the boat on their backs to the far side of the island.
The rusty mare slapped P-21's back as she laughed.
Poor Thrush ain't quite the measure of her daddy, but she's the best girl for the job.
Oil Can said firmly as she smiled at P-21.
I had my reservations, but she's the mare who loves the seahorse the most. She was willing to let her daddy go to keep it.
The rest of the spark batteries went into a locker above the engine.
Seems to me that going downstream wouldn't require much power, P-21 said.
Shows you don't know boats, boyo,
Oil Can replied.
Going downstream, you've got the water pushing you into rocks, beams, snags, and worse. Half our power is spent maneuvering around obstacles, and the other half fighting the current. Just wait till you see the towers. Any boat that just tries to go with the flow is in for a nasty surprise. The Huffington River eats ponies. With all the rain about, there's a lot of energy in all that water.
Oh joy! Just another thing about this place that I hated. I found myself scowling in the direction of the city. It seemed so wrong. Like it was a trap trying to draw every pony in with lures of riches and food. I wondered just how many ponies had come to Huffington, only to end up being killed by raiders, poisoned by taint or radiation, or sucked dry by enervation fields. The more I thought about it, the more disturbing it became. Even Lacunae's goddess seemed distressed by this place. Huffington, the city that kills. It had killed ponies when zebras burned it. Killed zebras as it made itself the target of war. And now it killed every pony that it lured in. I could almost hear the cards shuffling in my head.
Hey, you okay, Blackjack? You've got that shooty look on your face,
P-21 asked, giving me a nudge.
I had a shooty look? I needed a mirror.
I'm just... not a fan of Huffington,
I replied sullenly. Oil Can chuckled as she rubbed her nose with a dirty hoof.
Heh, join the club. I used to live in Friendship City. Nice town. Maybe a touch crowded, but a good place to live,
she said as she checked some power cables.
One day, her daddy's in port, and so damned drunk that the town assigned him a guard so he wouldn't blow something up on accident. He mentions he needs an engineer. I've got a comfy life ahead of me, but he goes on about the riches, the adventure, the sights, the adventure, the rum, the adventure, the sex. Oh yeah, did he mention adventure? Boyo talked me into bed and then onto his boat. Been a lot of places. But Huffington's always been the worst. Always has some treasure to bring you here. Always has enough grief to make you wonder why you came in the first place. Bilgewater got eaten by a river serpent on this trip. I doubt he'll be the last. But the seahorse will be back. I'm sure of that.
So why do you stay?
P-21 asked. Oil Can sighed and smiled, reaching out to touch the engine. There was a lover's look in her eyes.
Back home, I had a pretty comfy life. Wasn't no 10-pony comfort, but comfy. Out here, well, we ain't found riches. The sights are all pretty damned ugly. The rum's watered down, and the sex gets a little awkward on a little boat like this. But the adventure? He sure wasn't lying about that. Long as the captain can steer her straight, I'll keep her running. To Huffington, or hell itself.
Seahorse wasn't exactly made for a luxury cruise. The five of us had one room to ourselves, and that only had four hammocks. We had to shift the footlockers into the middle of the space and throw some blankets atop them for lacunae. We were allowed to be there or sitting on the narrow walk that ran along the sides of the boat between the rails and the superstructure. P-21 pointed out that, since I couldn't fly, all my fancy new barding wouldn't be much better than an anchor. Damn it, what was the point of having cool-looking armor if I never got to wear it? There was a hum in the back of the ship that grew louder and louder. Then two streams of choppy water blasted out the rear of the boat just below water level. Tar Boots and Oil Can untied the lines and jumped nimbly into the rear of the boat, and the swoosh of water plumes increased. At the stern, on the top of the superstructure at the highest point of the boat, was the wheelhouse. For windows, it had rusty slats of metal that Thrush peered through as she moved the seahorse upstream of the bridge before slowly turning the boat around. Immediately, the whoosh died to a gurgle as the powerful current carried us downstream. I admit, I am a complete and utter pansy when it comes to flight. But if the whole height thing was taken away, I liked the sensation of being carried along without having to walk around.
Keep your eyes open,
Captain Thrush called down to us as we sat on the walk, leaning on the metal rail. I kept Taurus's rifle handy as my eyes scanned the scummy brown water.
What am I looking for? Till we get to the fork, anything poking out of the river bottom or any pony with a missile. We might come across some hoppers after fallen towers, but till then our biggest risk is running into something sharp and pointy,
she said calmly, making only the slightest adjustments to the boat's heading and letting the current do the rest.
Are ponies with missiles a common problem?
I called back, looking at the increasingly thick ruins lining the river and deliberately not looking at the enigmatic towers on the other side of the boat. This close to the core, I felt odd. Lightheaded. I could only assume it was the enervation fields of the city nipping at my cells. Thrush was keeping the seahorse in the middle of the river, but I felt the urge to ask her to move closer to the rubble-strewn western bank. She grunted.
Reaper wannabes and raiders, mostly. They gather in small groups to prey on Riverside or Flotsam. Unless they've got something big, we generally don't worry too much about it.
She gunned the engine and threaded the seahorse around a spur of concrete just barely below the surface. I spotted it only as we slid past it close enough to spit. Glory proved the most valuable pair of purple eyes. Standing in the bow just in front of the turret, She and the crew's lookout, a young green earth pony mare named Seabiscuit, spotted hazards lying just under the surface that I couldn't see even as we passed them. Glory pointed each out with her wingtips so that Thrush could steer clear of them. As the river carried us along, the ruins became even larger and more elaborate, and more damaged. Blocks of apartment buildings had slid right into the water and filled it with deadly debris. Pipes blasted jets of yellowish-brown, foamy, filmy water every few hundred feet as the land drained into the river. There was a small camp of four ponies. Raiders from the bloody bites on their limbs. I sighted them carefully, didn't see anything resembling a missile, and was about to fire when the captain said, "Don't. Gunshots carry on the water." Reluctantly, I lowered the rifle.
"And here I thought you weren't an executioner,"
the dusty voice said softly.
"I'm not an executioner. They were raiders," I muttered to myself,
glancing at the dealer, who was looking at the raiders with pity.
"They're dying from disease already. It's going to kill them one way or another."
I remembered the mare and mirror mare who had gorged until her stomach burst.
"It's not an execution if they're already going to die."
I flushed in anger as I saw Glory look back at me. Great! Now every pony was going to know I was losing it.
"Oh, well, that's convenient,"
he said with an understanding little nod.
"So long as you're granting mercy, it's okay. Funny, wasn't there another pony using the exact same logic just yesterday?"
"Shut up,"
I hissed softly.
"Of course, it wouldn't be the first time you've done it," he continued.
"Shut up!"
I yelled at the pale bastard, levitating Cupcake's revolver and pressing it to his forehead.
"Why the fuck do you do this? I was feeling halfway good, and then you reappeared. Why are you trying to make me remember killing them all? Why can't you just let me be happy for once?"
My magic tightened on the trigger. Sure, it wouldn't kill him, but I'd feel better.
"Blackjack?"
Glory said in a fearful voice as the dealer melted away. The gun was pointed right between her shocked eyes. My magic released the gun at once, and it bounced off the deck and landed in the river with a little splash. I stared into Glory's fearful and hurt eyes, and felt myself start to shake. I hadn't had the shakes like this in a while. I thought I was over it. I'd put it behind me. Matured. Moved on. I am a fucking idiot. I hadn't put anything behind me. I'd thrown it in a little closet and forgotten about it. I'd murdered 40 foals. Executed them. I'd rationalized. I'd justified. But my mind wasn't letting me let it go.
"I'm sorry, Glory. I wasn't talking to you. I'm just... sorry."
I saw the conflict in her eyes as I looked down into the water. Then she jumped over me and disappeared below decks.
"Well, that was interesting," Thrush said from behind the wheel.
"I don't want to talk about it."
She smiled and shook her head.
"Didn't ask if you did. You don't have to explain to me. I talk to ghosts too sometimes."
Not quite what I was dealing with. At least I hoped not.
"You do?"
"Sure. Dad asking me to shoot him,"
she replied in a soft, casual voice that made me shiver.
"Looking back, I probably should have. So it's only fair he gets to haunt me from time to time, right?"
Sometimes all it takes is 1 second. One wrong action. One little mistake, and something precious is gone for good. All except for the regrets. P-21 had as much affinity for sea travel as I did for air. He lay with his face in a bucket on the stern deck behind the wheelhouse. Really, I didn't mind the rocking at all. It gave me something to think about besides that my brain was playing nasty tricks on my mind, and that I'd almost shot Glory in the face. True, she'd shot me first, but we were way past that. My ears flicked as I heard a distant sound, like a deep breath being drawn continuously. It made my mane begin to itch in apprehension as I looked at the first of the fire-gutted ruins across the river, and then at the grim walls of the core.
"What is that?"
I asked Thrush as I rose to my hooves.
"Fallen towers,"
she replied in a soft, grim tone.
"You ponies better get down inside and tie yourselves in. This is going to be a little rough."
Her horn glowed as she lifted a length of rope and started tying herself to the boat. Somehow, I sensed a whole river full of understatement in that as I rose as high as I could, looking for the source of that terrible sound. I heard the others getting below, but I couldn't go hide. I had to see just what we were facing. The captain yelled something at me about breaking the first rule as I staggered forward. Passing the gun turret, I saw Oil Cam pulling out the guns. Our eyes met, and I saw the fear in them. This was something bad. I rushed to the front of the boat and ran into Seabiscuit trying to go the opposite direction. The sea green mare balked and backed to the bow of the boat as the deck heaved. We were going fast. Really, really fast. The wide river seemed ominously narrow, as if all the rubble and junk had constricted it into a foamy flume. The boat gave one more lurch, and the mare gave up trying to move back, and instead began frantically to tie herself to the rusty metal rings set into the deck. The mare yelled something at me, but I wasn't really listening at that point. My eyes stared out in front of me as I felt a sensation like taking a cold bath wash over me. Like everything else in Hovington, I suspected that the massive core towers rising to the rolling clouds were ridiculously over-engineered. However, despite that, during the war's fiery end, one of the towers had broken off 10 stories or so up and had fallen across the river. The heavy, armored face of the fallen tower acted as a dam of sorts, and the tower's fall had shattered and knocked down a half dozen more buildings that were now also lying in the swirling fury of frothing water. The water poured over the jagged stumps of the fallen foundations like saliva over teeth. The river was hungry.
"How in the hell are we supposed to get through that?"
I shouted. Then I stared as the boat flew between a pair of streetlights. We weren't going down a river anymore. This was a street. The impromptu dam had driven the river out of its banks, and now we were navigating racing currents running through the ruins of the shattered office buildings. Broken foundations and rusted streetlights flew past us as the water flew faster and faster towards the source of that perpetual inhalation.
"Tie yourself down!"
Seabiscuit screamed, more than likely what she was trying to tell me the first time. She quickly grabbed a second length of rope, knotted it around my chest, and tied it to another ring.
"The captain will get us through!"
she yelled, the green mare staring back at Thrush with a look of frantic faith. The captain just stared grimly ahead. Then I saw exactly where she was taking us. The tower had not fallen completely intact. A split had opened up inside it where the top third had snapped back like a peppermint stick and created a yawning chasm that the river was forced into. However, I didn't see a way through. Only endless black. The seahorse seemed to hang, suspended on that eerily smooth rolling tongue of water that poured down endlessly into the gullet of the fallen skyscraper. And then, with a blast of cold, wet mist, we plunged into the darkness. I gripped the rail with my hooves as we plummeted into the hollow interior of the skyscraper. Then, just as we'd fallen down, the water rose into a vertical wall again, and this time we were going up. The seahorse rode the arching wall of water as it poured along the interior of the building like an enormous pipe. In my mutated sight, I could see the rusted steel beams stabbing at the seahorse like spears. Something banged against the underside of the ship, and I felt the entire vessel jump as we raced wildly down the interior of the building. Cracks in the wall sprayed cold, foul water in my face. I had no idea how Thrush, how any pony could navigate this passage. Then I spotted light ahead, and with it the sight of another wall of water churning sideways. How could a vertical wall of water move sideways?
Hang on!
Seabiscuit screamed in my ear. I wrapped my front hooves around the railing as we approached the surging sweep of fluid. For one terrifying moment, I swore we flew. My stomach rose in my throat as we were ejected from a second split in the side of the tower and right at the face of a fallen apartment building. The water rose up and up, and we rose with it. Higher and higher the boat rose, and I stared down towards the stern. I wasn't sure if I was simply soaked through, or if I wet myself at the sight. Then our rise stopped, but Seabiscuit's did not. She continued going up and out, connected only by the rope tied to the ring. The rope went taut. Then, with a metallic ping, the metal snapped. Her teal eyes widened in horrified resignation as she started to plunge back down towards the churning water as the boat hung in the air. I screamed as I set my hooves and launched myself into the air, my legs flailing. Save one. Just save one. Her trailing rope smacked me in the face, and I gripped it with my hooves, teeth, magic, anything. My rope went taut as well, and the ring held as we swung back and crashed into the deck of the seahorse. My teeth rattled as I hit the rail and hooked a rear leg around it. She tangled with the turret. I wondered if we would hang like that forever. A small tilt in the wrong direction. Backwards towards the surging torrent spraying from the tower. Then the boat fell. With horrifying, ponderous slowness, it tilted away from the crumbling apartment face as I was looking down at the swirling froth of brown water. There was nothing I could do but clutch the rail with every bit of strength I could muster. Every inch of me was slammed with more force than I'd ever thought possible as the boat fell upside down. My breath blasted from my body in a bubbly scream as I felt like the rope was about to cut me in two. Then I was lifted from the water as the seahorse reverse capsized, coming to the surface dripping wet and pointing her nose downstream. I opened my eyes, looking for the sea-green pony and staring at the rope trailing in the water. The rope burn had torn two raw strips of flesh from around my forehoofs. Just one. Please, let me save just one. I floated a buck to my mouth and chewed down as the seahorse raced towards a jagged strand of crushed buildings and debris. My heart thundered as I heaved with all my strength. I could barely breathe as I looped the rope around my forelegs, pulled and looped again. I clenched my eyes shut, imagining the beams and concrete ripping her apart. It felt as if one of those jagged spurs had lodged straight through my chest as I pulled again and again. And then a limp green form came over the rail and fell atop me. Water dribbled from her mouth as she just lay there.
One, just one.
I whispered softly as I rolled upright and pressed down on her sides, trying to force the water out. Thorn. Roses. Tumbleweed. Scoodle. 11 zebras. 40 foals. Let me save just one. She lay there. Another corpse. My heart racing so fast that I collapsed beside her. Thorn. Roses. Tumbleweed. Scoodle. Zebras. Foals. Seabiscuit. Then she coughed, gasped, retched, and finally vomited water. I shook as I fought to sit up, trying to do something helpful and managing just to blubber and hold her shoulders as Tarboots walked carefully along the deck, rushing to help. She drew one shaking breath after another as I fell on my back, gasping for breath with the blood-soaked rope tight around my hooves. Everything fell away as I smiled. I saved one, you bony son of a bitch. I saved one.
Wake up, Fishy. Fishy?
My mom called over to my bed.
I know you're awake, Go Fish. You're smiling. I am not. I'm sleeping.
And I snored loudly to prove it. She bumped me with her nose.
Security mares have to wake up and do our jobs, Fishy. I don't want to be security, Mama. It's no fun.
I muttered, looking up at my lavender mama with her smart, indulgent smile and striped purple and red mane.
Security is the best job in the stable, she said softly. Every pony says that about their job,
I said as I rubbed my eyes and yawned. She just chuckled.
But ours really is. We get to save ponies. Why do we gotta be so mean to the boys, Mama?
I asked as my eyes looked over at two bucks walking with their heads hanging, following closely behind two mares. They looked hurt. And something else. I didn't know what shame was back then. She smiled sadly as I got a green alfalfa smoothie from the cafeteria, munching on the sweet grassy sludge.
We don't. But a lot of mares can be mean, so a lot of mares are mean to ponies they think it's okay to hurt. But why? They're not my class or nothing. What do the colts do?
I asked as I ignored the spoon and straw and chowed down.
They do something very important for the stable. They make babies.
I imagined something like a factory where little fillies were assembled like dolls.
They do?
Mm-hmm.
One of them made you, she said with a smile. Not sure which one, but...
She flushed slightly as she said that more to herself than to me.
But what did they do?
I asked with a little frown.
Well, in your grandmother's time, colts and fillies shared all kinds of jobs. All except for one. The overmare. Every pony got one baby to take over their jobs when they died. Whether they were bucks or mares. Then, one day, the overmare had a baby colt. The males were happy because there were a lot more mares than bucks, anyway, and they thought the rules weren't fair. I don't think the rules are very fair, either. It's stupid. I gotta go to bed when I'm not even tired. If you did, maybe you wouldn't have problems waking up,
she said as she levitated a napkin to wipe my face clean.
Anyway... The overmare said that the colt couldn't be an overmare, because he wasn't a mare. The buck said that the overmare was breaking the rules because she couldn't have another baby. Then her foal died in medical. The bucks declared that the overmare had killed him to have another baby, and demanded she be replaced. But there's nothing in the rules for taking away an overmare's job.
I gasped and squirmed, trying to get away from her floating napkin.
And did she, Mama?
She just smiled sadly and shrugged.
The bucks thought she did, and they were angry.
They took over the maintenance level and threatened to do something very bad if the Overmare didn't step down. The Bucks had a lot of mares wanting to help them before, but breaking the air purification talismans would have killed every pony. There was a nasty fight, and several important parts of the stable were damaged. Finally, most of the Bucks were captured, and the Overmare said that from then on, the mares would run the stable, and the Bucks would make the babies.
I munched my green smoothie, making a mess of my face again.
Huh. I wondered why I never saw any colts at school. Well, except for this one. He's always hiding near the door. Or he was,
I said as I tapped my hooves against the table.
I haven't seen him since I took him back to medical.
She gave me such a sad smile.
Try not to think about it, Fishy.
Because once you started, you wouldn't stop. Not till it drove you mad. Security were friends with security. Thus, my friends were, by default, the children of security mares. Daisy limped to the corner of the schoolroom where we were being taught our core lessons and security training by the bored, burned-out banality of Miss Textbook. Marmalade looked at the cream-colored filly in concern, at the darkened red bruises on her face and the twitchy look in her eyes. There were bandages on her legs, side and flank.
Are you okay, Daisy?
I asked, looking at the bruises on her cheek and muzzle.
Yeah, I got into a fight,
she said, sniffing as if it were no big deal. Daisy always got into fights. As security, she was supposed to fight. We all were. But I always wondered just who she was picking them with.
So what's Teach going on about?
She asked, and the honey-colored marmalade and I looked at each other in concern. Daisy never cared about what the teacher taught.
The Ministry of Awesome, and how it was just a bone thrown to Rainbow Dash since she never actually did anything,
I said softly.
Yeesh, sorry I asked.
She yawned and we relaxed. Then Duct Tape walked by, and the homely gray filly looked at the three of us. No. Looked at Daisy. Daisy looked at her.
What are you looking at?
Duct Tape shook her head as she backed away.
I said, what the fuck are you looking at?
And as Duct Tape turned to run, Daisy charged her. Duct Tape begged and pleaded as Daisy plowed into the smaller gray filly and proceeded to pummel her.
You didn't see anything! You understand? Nothing, you gray pussy!
Daisy shrieked as she kicked the other filly over and over again while Textbook just looked on with a mild expression of annoyance, only slightly perturbed that her lecture had been interrupted.
Daisy!
I shouted in alarm, and the cream earth pony jumped as I raced to shove myself between her and the fetal Duct Tape. Marmalade just followed, because that was what she did. She didn't have the sense Celestia had given to Roach. Still, I shoved my way between them and kicked Daisy's face firmly with my forehooves. That seemed to snap her out of it enough to make her fall back.
Get taped, Medical Marmalade!
The yellow unicorn looked at me, then Daisy, then Duct Tape, and finally realized I was asking her to do something. She bit Duct Tape by her mane and dragged her out the door.
What is wrong with you, Daisy?
I yelled as the rest of the class pretended to listen to the teacher. Because that was safer than listening and thinking. The bandages had fallen away, and I stared at the cuts in Daisy's sides and flank. They'd only been barely healed by the magical bandages. And unless she'd been hiding a horn her entire life, there was no way Daisy could have made such regular cuts.
How?
Now I was the one slammed to the ground.
No pony. No pony at all. It was an accident. A fight.
She said, trying to shout down at me, but accomplishing very little. Don't think about it. Don't ask. Don't wonder. Crawl back into my desk and pretend like it never happened. Agree it was a fight, and don't ask who. Agree it was an accident, and don't imagine how. Do that, and she might forget as well. And you'd be friends. Friend-ish.
Did your...
was all I said. All I got out. She knew the question. I knew the answer as she tried to shove every ounce of her pain into me. And she had a whole lot of it to shove. I opened my eyes, feeling the bobbing of the boat and hearing the sounds of ponies walking above deck.
You okay?
Glory asked as I stirred.
Oh, I feel like I got hit by a boat.
I muttered, lying there and feeling my heart thunder. I felt bruised from horn to hoof.
You did get hit by a boat,
the captain replied as she leaned on the rear hatch.
Didn't I tell you to get below and strap in? The rest of your friends did. You ran out to the worst place you could.
The captain did not look happy about me breaking the first rule.
Seabiscuit, is she okay?
I asked as I looked at the torn skin on my front legs. At least my pit bucket saved me from some of the burns. But from the pain on my sides, I suspected I was missing hide there too. The captain's look softened.
Yeah, so I won't shoot you for breaking the first rule. Besides,
she added with a grin,
I have to admit, there's no sight quite like going through Fallen Towers.
I had to agree. I'd be having nightmares about it for a while. I noticed that the captain was also showing raw rope burns and bruises.
Normally, I would have waited a few days for the water to subside. The water level was half again as high as it should have been for safe passage. But you folks are in a hurry. Not that much of a hurry,
I groaned, momentarily sitting up and, regretting it. I fell back into Glory's hooves with a groan.
Where are we? How long have I been out? We're in Riverside, just below the falls. That crash did more than just crush both of you. It also busted a seal on the bottom. We can patch it, but it'll just take a while,
the captain said.
There's not a lot to see here, but you can take a peek around town. It's a finder's village, so it should be safe. Ish. Safe-ish. I like that word. Not quite safe, but in the neighborhood,
I muttered sarcastically. I slowly dragged myself to my hooves.
Well, get me my barding. Blackjack,
Glory said.
You just woke up from passing out after having a ship fall on you. And from your pulse, you've taken at least another buck. Why don't you just stay here and do something radical like rest?
I took a deep breath as I steadied myself, fighting to keep from hyperventilating. Nice and slow. Calm.
Well, Glory, there's three reasons why I have to go. First, I need to get out there so that whatever eyes and ears Sanguine and DJ Pony have can see me so he doesn't send that monster pony to chapel. Second, I want to see if there's any pony I can help. Third, and most important of all.
I took a moment, looking at her gravely.
I really need to go to the bathroom, and I'd rather not hang my fanny off the side of the boat.
Glory took one look at me in shock as the captain collapsed with laughter, then seized a pillow and beat me with it till I grabbed my bag and fled outside. After a visit to the town latrine, a ditch that reeked so badly it almost had me reconsidering the boat, I found myself in Riverside. The town of 24 inhabitants was built in a horseshoe-shaped strip of shops adjacent to the river. One floating dock made of old empty barrels stretched out to a post and the seahorse. The roads north and south were barricaded, and the park in the middle of the village held planter boxes filled with vegetables and waxy green grass. Shops were selling pale sides of smoked fish and slabs of radicator meat, and at one outdoor butcher shop, I saw two ponies cutting and chopping up an enormous frog. Despite the town's size, I got the impression that it had once seen better days. There were apartments above the repurposed stores that now had busted windows and were boarded shut. One shop only had some scrap metal, electronics, and 9mm ammo. I couldn't see any signs of families. There was a terrible sense that, at any moment, the last occupants would just fade away, leaving Riverside just another ruin.
"What happened here?"
I muttered as I looked at the ponies moving like ghosts around the almost empty shops.
"Same thing that's happened everywhere, miss,"
an old unicorn mare said as she mended a fishing net. I had to question the sense of any pony who ate anything out of that river. Slowly, I walked to her, and started as I realized that she was blind. Her milky eyes stared out at me as her hooves felt out the tears and her horn mended them.
"Blackjack."
"Fishy,"
she replied. Now that made me feel all kinds of strange and alarmed.
"What? How did you know?"
"My name. It's Fishy. Granny Fishy. Nice to meet you,"
she said with a soft chuckle.
"Oh."
I sat down across from her.
"What do you mean, the same thing happening everywhere?"
"Riverside used to be a nice village. We were smack in the middle of the West Side ruins. There was plenty to pick out of the countryside. Food. Safety. But the ruins have been picked clean, mostly. There's more and more raiders, more bandits, more reapers. Less folks bring in less food, so villages just dwindle away. Death picks off the ones who stay, and there's fewer and fewer boats."
"Is this lady bothering you, Mum?"
a pink mare with a pair of fish on her flank asked as she trotted up.
"No, thank you, Perch,"
Granny said as she waved a hoof at the mare, who took it between her own and guided it to her head so Granny could pat her.
"She was polite enough to ask about the town."
"It's those damn dogs that are to blame,"
Perch said with a stomp.
"Dogs?"
I blinked.
"The sand dogs,"
the elder unicorn answered.
"They live underneath the western ruins."
Perch, clearly having a lot more to say, stomped her hooves again.
"And they're a menace. They scavenge the ruins but don't trade, and I know they've got some decent salvage in their holes. They've got some weird cybernetics that make them too tough for most raiders and bandits, so we deal with them instead."
"Now that's enough, Perch. Times are tough enough without making things harder for some folks who don't deserve it,"
Granny said firmly to the younger mare. But the pink pony wasn't listening.
"You want to help?"
she said to me.
"Go down to the Riverside Station to the Sunset Line. Shoot every one of them and open up the tunnels for scavenging. That'll turn this place around no sweat,"
she said as she lifted up one of Granny's nets and sulked towards the river. The blind elder mare just sighed as she ran her hooves over the netting.
"Please don't mind her. She's just desperate to save the home she knows,"
Granny Fishy said as she tugged the nets with her horn and hooves.
"I suspect you feel the same way."
"You do?"
I gave a nervous little smile.
"No offense, but you don't know where I'm from. Trust me, no pony would want to save that place."
"Oh? But isn't that where you're going? Or maybe it's where you've been. Who can say?
she said as she carefully tied a hole.
I suspect you have a long trail before you to reach your home.
My mane started to tingle as I regarded her.
What do you know?
She chuckled at the wary question.
No, my dear, I simply mend holes in nets.
She replied with a toothless smile.
But I have a sense about you. The past and future reach through you. Messenger, harbinger, and judge. Life on one hoof, death in the other. Which will you decide? Not even the stars can tell.
Okay, that just jumped the creepiness factor up by 50 at least. P21 and Glory trotted up, the two probably noticing my slightly uneasy look.
Blackjack? Who's this?
Glory asked politely.
Granny Fishy,
she said with a broad smile as she thrust her hoof out in the general direction of Glory. Glory took it in her own and gave it a shake.
Ah, a Pegasus. How interesting.
How'd she get that from a hoof shake?
Fallen Glory,
Glory said softly as she glanced at me, then frowned at the old mare.
Did Blackjack tell you?
Oh, no, I just get a sense of things,
she said as she released Glory's hoof and returned to the net.
Like your name, Fallen. How far have you fallen, I wonder? Have you learned to hate? Have you learned to spite? Have you learned to crave vengeance? If not, how can you know how to forgive Fallen Glory?
How? What did you tell her, Blackjack?
She asked, clearly startled.
Nothing, I just met her,
I said defensively. P21 looked at Granny mending the net, then looked at me. I cocked a brow.
What? He said. I don't want creepy mystical mutterings about my fate or destiny, thank you very much.
He backed a few steps away from Granny.
Leave me out of it.
Oh, don't worry, young buck. Your fate has come and gone. It only begs the question of what happens in the epilogue,
the old mare said with a lazy wave of her hoof. For some reason, that seemed to bother him more than some cryptic remark. Then Perch yelled from across the square,
Granny! Stop with the fortune teller routine and get that last net patched up!
The blind mare chuckled, and I gave her a skeptical glance. Had all this just been a local messing with rubes?
Oh, well, fun is fun, but I'd best get back to work, she said. Don't give an old blind mare's words too much thought.
As we walked away, I looked back and saw her still wearing that lingering old smile.
Blackjack, are you sure about this?
P21 asked as we moved through the ruins.
It's one of my plans. Of course I'm not sure about it. But Perch said that if we could deal with the sand dogs, it'd open up the underground tunnels for salvaging again. And you know that there's always time for dealing with raiders and bandits. We've got at least 3 hours till Thrush patches up the boat, so why not do some good while we're here?
I have to wonder how your foes will view your good,
Lacunae said from the rear. She'd shed the heavy black lace dress and veil once we were out of sight of town.
Oh, please do not get her started with moral relativism, P21 groaned. She'll be stuck all day long.
Moral whatism?
Look, it's simple. We're good, they're bad. That's all I need to know.
Right, till one of them starts crying, the blue buck muttered. Why are 4 smart ponies being led around by an idiot?
Can't be that smart, then.
I stuck my tongue out at him and looked at Rampage. She still wasn't much bigger than a filly, but I wasn't going to pick a fight with her with that chainsaw knife in her jaws.
Hey, Rampage, are you smarter than me?
She spat out the blade and balanced it atop her head and said something in zebra to me. A toss of her red curls, and she caught the blade again in her jaws with a grin.
I'll take that as a yes,
I said with a roll of my eyes. The plan was simple. I'd keep an eye open on my EFS for red bars. Glory would scout them out. We'd annihilate them and save the day. My pitbuck navigation already had a toggle set on Riverside. How it knew, I'd never know. Once the dogs were out of the tunnels, the seahorse would hopefully be ready to continue downstream. I just hoped we didn't get lost amid these ruins. They were unlike anything I'd ever seen. The swampy remains of Flankfurt were nothing compared to the cracked and broken 10 and 20 story buildings that loomed over us. Most bore the telltale black charring of firestorms, and the streets were littered with rubble, smashed and twisted wagons, and of course, bones. Still, a century of scavenging had turned the ruins into rain-drenched shells. Perfect little lairs for predatory ponies. And speaking of which, there were some red bars straight ahead. I gestured to Glory, and she flitted from blasted-out window to blasted-out window, her gray hide and pale blue barding blending in with both sky and rocks. I had to keep track of her blue bar at times. She scouted the hostels and returned.
About 9 or 10. Some in an old store right around the corner, and the others in a coffee shop across the street. They've got a sniper on the 3rd floor. I couldn't tell if they're raiders or bandits, but they're well armed. Red, it's dead,
I muttered, glancing at my pitbuck. I imagined the cards shuffling in my mind, but I wasn't even going to acknowledge the pale bastard. If they were armed and hostile, this wasn't an execution. This was trouble, and we were going to take care of it.
Okay, so I'm in front, Glory from above attacking the sniper. Rampage mixing up. P21, keep your eyes open and use persuasion if there's a knot of them. And you?
I looked at Lacunae and suddenly felt at a bit of a loss.
What are you going to do?
I'll back you up, she said with a faint smile.
Right. That was less than specific or comforting.
Okay. Just don't shoot me, please,
I asked with a half-joking smile. I started towards the hostels when P21 cleared his throat.
What?
I asked, looking at him with his sardonic little smile. He stretched out a hoof and tapped the helmet sitting atop my saddlebags.
Oh, right. Headshot. Good thinking.
I levitated and strapped the helmet in place, flushing slightly. Okay. Now were we ready? We were. I strolled down the street as clear as day with Taurus's rifle floating ahead of me. Rampage moved like a ponified cat, unnervingly quiet without her clanging armor. Glory moved overhead like a silent guardian angel, while Lacunae walked behind me. Where P21 was, I had no idea. Laying mines? Readying grenades? I just knew he'd be there. Through the scope, I saw a mare walking from the coffee shop towards the corner grocery store. I saw the spiked armor, the sawed-off shotgun, and, more importantly, the half-dozen hooves dangling off the sides of her barding. Most of all, I saw the eager grin that split her scarred face, yellowed eyes widening in glee at the sight of me. Then I sent her brains out the back of her head with a clean shot through her left eye. All hell broke loose. At once, 3 more ponies rushed out, but they had the sense to go for cover behind piles of rubble. One opened up with an SMG, a 10mm Zebra model if I knew my guns, and sprayed bullets down the street at me. Where the heck had raiders gotten enough bullets to waste them with an SMG? The pistols were a little more accurate,
But my barding took the rounds with equanimity as I took aim with the rifle and blew the noggin off the mare with the SMG. From overhead came the boom of a rifle round, and a resounding ping glancing off the side of my helmet. Somewhere, I was sure P-21 was thinking smug thoughts. Okay, enough badass stupidity. I had their attention now, so I made for my own cover behind a fallen wagon as my head throbbed. As nice as the rifle was, it just didn't have the time or rate of fire for messy work. Good thing I had a shotgun. Glory swept sideways, raking the sniper's nest with her beam pistols. There was another loud boom from the sniper, but she deftly twisted clear of the shot, pirouetted, and resumed cooking the sniper with little beams of death. I just waited as Rampage raced in towards the two raiders with the 10mm automatics. The sight of a charging little zebra pony seemed to make them hesitate in amusement. They realized their mistake too late as Rampage leapt up over the rubble and wrapped her hooves around the mare's neck. The Ripper roared as she sawed her head clean off in a fountain of blood that seemed to make the remaining raider stare in awe. No wonder Deus had been able to command these psychopaths. Unfortunately, her awe made her a sitting duck for a round of buckshot to the head. Now, where were the rest? From the inside of the store spilled the remainder of the raiders. They'd been taking their time getting their barding on and guns ready. Another unicorn mare came out, spraying Rampage and me wildly, and this close in, the shots were much more effective. I slipped into sats to plant two neat blasts to her head, then fired two more into the milling raiders behind her. Rampage jumped right over the fallen unicorn and slid on a sheet of blood to saw and kick wildly at the limbs of the raiders as I fired off two more rounds, and then reloaded as fast as my horn could manage. Then from the coffee shop behind me came the purr of a minigun motor. Instantly, my ass began to vibrate as the stream of shots started to chew through my barding. The 5mm rounds lacked individual punch, but I knew that in seconds those individual rounds would add up to a very holy blackjack. Raiders behind me, raiders in front of me. Not good. There was a soft thump, and a moment later the raider with the minigun was enveloped in a blast that tore off their head and all four limbs. What was left of the body collapsed in a bloody heap that writhed for a few seconds. As two more came rushing to the door, P-21 emerged like a blue ghost, bit the stem off of a frag grenade, and tossed it through. A second explosion, and two more red bars vanished. With Rampage already raising havoc inside, I charged in through the door and proceeded to paint the raiders with lead. One had heavy metal armor, but no helmet. Sats allowed the buckshot to render his head to paste. When the gun was empty, I tossed it into my sling rather than waste time reloading, then grabbed the fallen unicorn's 10mm SMG. One raider was taking aim with his hunting rifle. In a second, I unloaded the 25 bullets left in the clip into him. His rifle shot still hurt like hell, though. And then, just like that, it was over. There was one red bar left in the back of the grocery store, but I didn't see a target. Back room? Unconscious, maybe. I'd find out, I supposed. Lacunae walked calmly behind me, her hooves avoiding stepping in blood.
Watch out. There's one more left in the back.
I looked at the carcasses on display. Odd that so many of them were striped. They must have ambushed a zebra tribe nearby. It certainly explained all the 10mm ammo. The guts dangled like garlands over the shelves. I moved towards the rear door that I guessed led into the stockroom. I paused and noticed a forlorn bottle of Sparkle Cola sitting in the dead refrigerator. I floated it out, popped the top, pocketed the cap, and took a drink. Then continued to the door with a bottle floating on one side and the gun on the other. Carefully, I swung the door open, ready to pop sats and end the hostile. This was a nursery. I saw the foals laying together in some kind of pen next to a roll-up metal door. My mutant eyes picked out the shapes, one of them shaking and sobbing and rocking amid the rest.
"Hey, it's okay now,"
I said softly as I put the gun away. She was clutching a little ball to her chest as she sniffled and hiccuped.
"You're safe now."
Then she looked at me. She giggled, her scarred lips slashed all the way to her ears as she raised her ball and bit off the stem. I just stood there as she threw it at me from the heap of dead fillies and colts. I couldn't move. I could only think, play, as I watched the grenade arc towards me. A shimmering whitish-purple field appeared around the filly and the grenade. The explosive hit it and then bounced back just before the fuse ran out. The room shook, part of the roll-up door blew out, and I just stood there, looking in a daze at the pulped pile of ponies. A voice whispered in my head.
"I told you I'd have your back."
The raiders had a surprising collection of firearms and explosives, something we helped ourselves to. Despite myself, I kept a pair of the 10mm SMGs and collected as many 30-round clips as I could. Glory looted the sniper's nest on the third floor and brought locked ammo containers down for P-21 and me to open. Rampage was munching down in the raider's stores. I really hoped she was keeping it to identifiable food and skirting cannibalism. But she was a growing girl. Literally. I thought she looked as if she'd added half an inch since we left Riverside. I made sure to grab some extra cans for later. We heaped up the raiders in the middle of the street, and P-21 tossed in two incendiary grenades. With two soft whumps, the raiders began to cook in magical magenta flame. The real surprise was Lacunae picking up the minigun with her magic and turning it over curiously. I was struck with how she handled it, ejecting the belt before detaching it from the slain raider's battle saddle. She tested the motor, rotating the barrel slowly as she maneuvered the massive weapon with shocking grace. She kept the weapon pointed towards the ground as she examined it closely. She knew guns.
"Is there something that you need?"
she asked quietly as she noticed me watching her.
"I just didn't expect the goddess to be into guns." "More than a few of those who have joined the goddess know about guns,"
she said patiently. But there was also a strange, scornful undertone in the telepathic voice.
"The goddess, of course, knows that guns are weak and worthless compared to raw magic. What are bombs and missiles to the energy of the cosmos itself?"
she asked as she turned the weapon over again, pointing it down the street. I had no idea how you aimed a minigun.
"You disagree?" "One of the few who can. The goddess is quite disgusted with me for even handling such a weapon,"
she said calmly as her magic lifted the heavy ammo drum from the battle saddle and slid it underneath the weapon, connecting the belt once more.
"There is a certain destructive elegance in it, however. They are tools of war crafted with care and skill."
I noticed her magic had no difficulty at all handling the weapon and ammo. I doubted I'd even be able to carry it.
"So, now you have a bigger horn and a bigger gun,"
I grunted softly. A long, regretful sigh drifted through my mind.
"Perhaps. But you have friends, Blackjack." "Are you saying that the goddess doesn't have friends?"
I asked, scratching my head. She slowly shook her head in a negative. I gave a confused smile.
"Wait, I thought all of you Alicorns were connected, right?"
She gave a single nod.
"Why would the goddess want friends if you're, well, all together?" "Just because we are bonded doesn't mean that we like each other,"
she said as she pointed the minigun down the street and narrowed her eyes. The motor whirred, and a spear of fire and lead lanced out to chew through the rusted side of a wagon. Her eyes relaxed as the gun whirred down.
Sometimes I think the goddess desires friends more than anything else in the wasteland. She simply can't admit it.
There's nothing that says, "Welcome, we have milk and cookies," quite like a welcome mat that really did bear the words, "Welcome, we have milk and cookies." So it was somewhat understandable that, standing in front of the Riverside subway station, I felt a distinct sense of unease nibbling at my mane. I looked at the welcome mat sitting in front of the only unbarricaded door to the subway.
"Well, should we knock?"
I muttered as I stepped closer to the door. Beep, beep, beep. I jumped back just as a cone of shrapnel blasted up from the covered landmine.
"Right, no knocking. That might count as a doorbell, though."
Carefully, I gripped the door with my magic, imagining a canine Deus rushing out and screaming at me. Nothing came out, however.
"Maybe I should go first," P21 said as he looked at the black doorway.
Emergency lighting flickered in the depths.
"And try not to touch anything," he said as he dug through his saddlebags and took out a pair of wire cutters.
He knelt in the doorway, and there was a metallic snip as he cut a tripwire strung across it. He stepped cautiously through and passed the two rigged single-shot shotguns. I snagged the box of 12-gauge shells as I followed close behind him. The subway was a nightmare of tangled junk and debris, with one path snaking back and forth through it. There were two mines half hidden on the edges of the trail, but P21 walked with extraordinary cautiousness. I almost made him put on my barding. I might survive one mine, but he certainly wouldn't. He froze at a dingy bucket.
"Blackjack, could you please turn that to face me?" he said softly.
I slowly rotated the mouth of the bucket to face us, swallowing at the mine within. Carefully, he stretched forward and tagged the disarm tab with his hoof.
"Thank you."
My respect for him rose even more.
"How did you know?"
I asked. He gave me a sardonic look.
"I thought, if I wanted to kill a mare stomping in the front of a row of ponies, what would I hide a mine inside so she'd kick the bucket?"
Glory gave a nervous little laugh. The pair of us looked back at her and she blinked.
"Oh, that wasn't a joke?"
"Yes, Glory, it was a joke. It just wasn't very funny."
"Why don't I just trot ahead and set them all off? It's not like they can kill me,"
Rampage suggested with a cocky little cant of her head.
"Because if you miss one, then we all get blown up anyhow," P21 replied as he continued his crawl.
We reached the turnstile, and P21 started to push through when he froze.
"Glory, can you fly over this and check the far side?"
The little gray Pegasus nimbly flew over the top and landed behind the gate.
"Don't push through that. There's a gas tank and a grenade."
P21 had me float his clippers to her, and she snipped the wire to the grenade. Only then did we move past. Thankfully, the space beyond the turnstile was clear of the heaps of debris, and we were able to spread out a little. There were bathrooms to the side with red hostels. I pushed through, down to the round lounge, and relaxed at the sound of skittering rad roaches. I stomped them with my hooves, then blinked as I saw a Sparkle Cola machine. Smiling, I trotted over and started to push the button to see if I could get out a few more sodas.
"Blackjack!"
P21 warned, and I froze. I looked back at him, then at the machine. Slowly I stepped back. It was finally starting to click that I shouldn't touch anything in here. Then I heard the metallic click of a first aid kit being unlatched near the door to the bathroom. I turned. As it creaked open, a round tin fell into Glory's hooves.
Beep, beep, beep.
She stared at it in horror, frozen. It exploded in her face. Glory fell back, screaming as she writhed, her hooves shredded up to her elbows as she thrashed wildly in agony. I leapt atop her, pinning her, holding her tight as I levitated out a Med-X and jammed it into her leg. She stilled enough to go from screaming to sobbing.
"I can't see,"
she said around bloody and torn lips.
"Goddesses, I am so sorry.
I stared down at her as I tried to tear my eyes away from her bloody sockets. "Save this one, Blackjack. No matter what, save this one." I fought to shake off the urge to fall apart. I looked at the metal embedded in her face. Oh, goddesses, this was going to suck.
"Shut up,"
I said as my magic proceeded to pick the bits of shrapnel out like tweezers. She gritted her teeth, trying to strangle her screams as piece after bloody piece was removed. Then I poured Sakashi's healing potion down her throat. And there was nothing for it. I took out a Hydra and injected the gray sludge into her as well. She immediately started gasping and squirming as her face began to knit back together, thanks to the influence of both potions. Then she opened her bloody eyes and stared at me in shock. Sobbing, she curled up tight against me as she shook. Her face still looked red and raw, but not blind or dead.
"Shh, it's okay. It's okay, Glory. You're okay."
But she nearly hadn't been.
"Okay. So the rule is, don't touch anything."
"It might be too late,"
P-21 muttered as he looked behind us.
"They must have heard that."
"Yeah. Well, they almost killed my friend. They're about to hear a lot worse,"
I muttered darkly. We picked our way down. P-21 found a grenade box with a live grenade inside, a bottle of Sparkle Cola tied to a bomb inside a steel crate, and three grenades rigged to a tripwire. All of that was before we even reached the stairs going down to the actual subway platform itself. Three more mines were on the steps, and he slowly crawled down to them. Then I glanced up and grabbed his rump hard with hooves and magic, pulling him back.
"Stop!"
I said sharply as I looked directly above him. Three little amber lights were shining on the roof just above his head. If there'd been a beeping, who would have looked up? And then I felt him shaking in my hooves.
Get off, he stammered.
I looked at exactly what I'd grabbed, and suddenly felt the noxious mix of shame, embarrassment, and general horror at what I'd pulled to get him back in. It was as if he couldn't move, even once I'd moved away. I wanted to give him a hug as he trembled and gasped for air. But I knew that was the one thing I couldn't give him.
"I'm sorry, P-21, it was just an accident,"
I muttered.
"I know. Just, I know,"
he said before pressing his trembling lips together as he walked away from us.
"Just give me a second,"
he said as he walked back towards the bathrooms.
"Blackjack,"
Rampage said in a tone mixing impressed with scandal.
It was an accident,"
I sputtered as I flushed furiously.
I hadn't meant to grab that with my magic. He was about to get blown up."
I stood and started towards the bathroom.
I gotta go apologize." "You," Rampage said firmly as she stepped in my path, "need to disarm those mines while some pony with a lot less history, a lot more annoyance, and a lot more regeneration talks to him. Okay?"
I stared at her in shock as she turned away, looking at the teddy bear on her flank as she disappeared towards the bathroom. I frowned and snuck to the door as well. I wasn't going to allow a repeat of Thorn. I'd bury her alive if I had to.
Go away, Rampage, he said in that short-breathed voice. I'm not in a mood to talk about it, especially with you.
No surprise, she replied.
So then why are you staying? He demanded crossly. Why is it that every mare around me thinks that she can tell me what to do now? This isn't Stable 99.
No, it isn't. And I'm not making you talk. I'm not your friend. You can keep silent and not feel guilty. Lie to my face. Beat the snot out of me, if that'll make you feel better. All I'm gonna do is sit here.
There was a soft thump.
And listen, in case you do. Or until you're ready to go. Or until Blackjack blows us all up with a well-timed sneeze.
I am not going to talk about it.
No response from Rampage.
Go away, damn it! There's nothing to talk about, he said in a trembling voice.
I pressed my back against the wall, my ears twitching as I dreaded what he might say. Then his breathing caught and he said,
I can't believe she grabbed me like that.
Well, Blackjack doesn't do anything if it's not spectacularly. Even groping the last buck in the wasteland who'd won it,
Rampage said dryly, and despite myself, I felt my cheeks burn.
This is stupid. It was an accident. I know that.
His thin voice cracked again.
I thought it was over this.
Yeah, funny how it's never over till it's over, she said. So, is it because she grabbed you, or because she grabbed you?
I don't want to talk about it,
he said in a brittle voice I'd never heard before. I was so used to him being so calm and stoic. And then there was this terrible hitch in his throat, and then a sob reached my ear.
Took you back, didn't it?
Rampage said in a calm, mature voice, so terribly different from her normal impudence, or the snide tone after killing Thorn.
It was an accident, P-21. She saw the mines overhead and just acted. It's what she does, and I know she feels horrible for it.
I know, I just... She killed him. And she used me. And I know she's a good pony. And she didn't mean it. But I can't...
He broke off in a shaking sob.
So, it's because she grabbed you,
she murmured softly.
I know it was just an accident. I sometimes wish she'd left me outside Stable 99. That she hadn't tried to find me in flank. I feel so glad to be alive until... something. Anything reminds me of that place. And it feels like I'm back there.
He sniffed terribly as I clenched my eyes shut.
And worst of all, the second she did it, I was ready to...
He choked like he was being strangled.
Perform,
Rampage softly offered, and he sobbed again like a colt. I sat there helplessly, crying too as I listened to him right around the corner. A good pony. That's what he'd called me. He was the good one. Even Rampage, barring the murderer within her. They were all good ponies. I was the one so cowardly I had to eavesdrop.
I couldn't help it. She touched me like that, and it was like she was next on my breeding queue. Everything I felt and thought, everything I've wanted, was just gone. She touched me like that. and I was back there again.
He gave a hysterical half-cry, half-laugh.
And you know what I thought? What I really thought? I hope she likes it. That's what I thought. Not get your horn off me. Not how dare you. Not why did you do that. Not even pretend like it's not a big deal.
You've been conditioned to be this way. It's not your fault. Blackjack is heading back there now to deal with the ponies responsible, right? You need to not blame yourself. This was a stupid accident. She didn't mean it. You didn't mean to react as you did. Neither of you is to blame.
She took a deep breath.
I'm going to contact Dr. Helpinghoff in Manhattan. He's a lot more reliable than those Ministry of Peace hacks. I probably wouldn't have been able to stay in the guard if he hadn't.
Rampage? What are you talking about?
P-21 asked softly. There was only silence. Then she stammered.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know any of that. I don't know any of that at all. But I can tell you Helpinghoff's clinic's terminal number. His receptionist is Carrot Cake. He tries to sing like Sweetie Belle. I don't know how or why I can know that. So what the hell did I just say it for?
Now it sounded like Rampage was the pony falling apart. But it also seemed to pull him back together as well. She let out a shaky little sniff.
You think maybe Blackjack's assembling the deadliest therapy group in the wasteland?
Goddesses, I hope not. Blackjack the therapist. We're really doomed.
Then he paused.
You know, I haven't heard anything explode in a while. You don't suppose she's listening to us right now, do you?
Come on, even Blackjack wouldn't be that dumb.
I grimaced, rose to my hooves, and tried to sneak away as I blushed shamefully. I needed to find a hole and bury myself until I sprouted some new brains. They grew like mushrooms, right? Keep them in the dark and feed them shit? Maybe Smart screwed the same way. Unfortunately, I was so occupied by thoughts of fungal brains that I kicked an empty Sparkle Cola bottle. The two shouted indignantly at me as I ran, but afterwards there was laughter, too. Maybe there was also some hope.